Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. What you drinking today?
Okay, guys. First of all, it's just the regular caramel crunch coffee mixed with regular coffee with my creamer in it. However, I want to talk about these cups. My middle sister and her husband bought us coffee cups for Christmas.
Yep.
And they are what I'm going to call paradox coffee cups, okay?
That's true.
So one cup says me, one cup says you. And we run into the problem when we're deciding who's going to have what cup. How do you handle that? Everybody should have a me cup, everybody should have a you cup, depending on whose point of view you're looking at. So how I solve this problem is that Eliza's name comes earlier in the alphabet than my name. So she has me and I have you because you comes later in the alphabet. So that is how the paradox has been solved for now, alphabetical. And what are you drinking?
I was drinking black coffee earlier, and I had a whole bottle of water, but now I am drinking
adrenaline shock, smart energy, sour candy flavor.
Because I did not know that was even a flavor until yesterday, so I've got this sour candy. I tried their cotton candy yesterday. And I could taste the aftertaste in the cotton candy. I can't taste the aftertaste in the sour candy version. It's like
clean energy, electrolytes, boost performance, muscle recovery,
and all that jazz.
And that was your not ad for adrenaline shock yeah. Energy drink.
The real reason I got it was because it was like a dollar. This morning was a little bit of a doozy waking up. Dova kept trying to wake me up earlier than I wanted to. So I was researching for next week's Norse mythology. Like, I was already tired. My eyes were already tired. But then I started getting a really massive headache. Then I started feeling nauseated. So I tried to go to bed. And let's just say it didn't work out. Dova's a butt face, but I still love her. She gave me this pill that just, I don't know what it was, but it looked like Tums, but it wasn't Tums. And it was like a magic anti-nausea medicine. Mm-hmm. And then I had some eggs and lightly buttered toast. Mm-hmm. And then I was all better. And ibuprofen.
Yeah. For the headache.
Can I have some ibuprofen in there? I think I put a lot of stuff in my body yesterday that was like holistic. I don't know about anybody else if you've ever tried a lot of holistic things at once and then it just kind of backfires because your body feels like shit right afterwards because it's trying to get all the toxins out of you.
Like how when you do yoga or when you do a massage, you need to drink a lot of water yeah. to get the toxins out of your system.
I drank all this stuff and I didn't drink enough water to go with it. Now I feel like a train hit my face. That's definitely probably part of the problem and also probably partially because I didn't eat enough food yesterday while playing video games.
She's still alive. I kept her alive. It's
she
fine.
Did. She's like,
she's fine.
She's like, what's wrong with you? I don't know. Speak more. I don't know what's going on. Ashley, you're the worst patient. I am aware.
I don't know if I'd say the worst patient.
I'm not the worst. I'd like...
There's definitely some people in my family who are worse patients than you. But that's because they don't listen to medical advice.
Well, that's true.
You listen to the advice after I figured out what the heck was wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's the problem. Eliza's very rarely sick.
Yeah.
So she didn't know how to explain what was wrong.
I was just like, headache. Okay, nausea. Okay, what kind of nausea? What does that even mean? She's like, is it like a car sick? I'm like, yeah. Like, no. I just know I don't feel good.
She's fine.
I'm fine.
That's your favorite thing. We'll be watching something and that I've seen before and someone will get like injured and I'll be like, for example, Firefly.
Oh my God.
When
the first time I ever watch it, she's like, she knows all the things of Firefly. And I'm like, oh, okay, like brand new, bright eyes, never seen this show before.
So Shepherd gets like fucking walloped in the head. And he goes down, and it looks like something that should have killed him. And I'm like, he's fine.
Now, like, my first instinct was like, and she's like, he's fine. And all of a sudden, bam, 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 I'm like, looking at him, she's like, he's still fine.
He's still fine. So now, anytime I'm like, that person's fine, she's like, a little bit skeptical.
Just a bit. Like, after that, I'm like, oh, that's fine to you. Well, touche. Because every time I'm like, it's a short walk, it's like, at least 3 to 5 miles.
Yeah.
And then you want to kill me at the end. So, to the episode, today we're talking about Greek mythology.
Right.
And I know it's winter time, but I could not help myself. And after last week's episode, I did make a mention of the god Pan, and I was like, you know, we haven't talked about Pan yet.
Yeah.
And so, guess who I'm talking about today? The Greek god Pan.
You don't say.
So, Pan was the god of the wild. Shepherds, flocks, nature of mountain wilds, rustic music and impromptus, and companion of the nymphs. He was also revered by hunters with his realm in small game and birds. He is the only god in Greek mythology to have died. He is described as having hindquarters and horns of a goat, very much like a faun or satyr, and like more of like a man on the top. Earlier depictions of him from 500 BCE, he is seen as all goat, standing upright, but later on you find him with the upper body of a man.
Oh.
Yeah, so originally apparently he was like not man at all, just like a walking goat.
Nice.
Yes. His homeland was rustic Arcadia, which if you were looking at a map, it's located in the center of Peloponnese. Also considered the god of fields, groves, wooded glens, and is very much associated with intercourse, sex, etc. Yes, children, if you are listening, we have an explicit warning on this show for a reason. There is sex involved in this episode. Due to this association, he is closely tied to spring and fertility. The word we often use today, panic, derives from Pan's name, causing an overwhelming feeling of frantic agitation and distress.
It's true.
The Roman counterpart of Pan was named Faunus.
A little on the nose.
A little bit, yeah. Many scholars believe Pan derives from a Proto-Indo-European god believed to be an important pastoral deity. His earliest appearance was in Pindar's Pythian Ode 3, where Pan is associated with a mother goddess, possibly believed to be either Rhea or Cybele. Pan's parents are unclear in the mythology. Generally, it is believed he is the son of Hermes and a wood nymph, either Dryope or Penelope. In some early sources, for example from Pindar, he is the son of Apollo and Penelope. So there are other stories where there are two Pans, one that is the son of Hermes and Penelope, and another that is the son of Zeus and a nymph named Hybris.
Honestly, would not be surprised if it was the second.
Touche. There is a story where Penelope slept with all 108 of her suitors while Odysseus was away, and then she had Pan. And this is what I put as a note. Talk about a more intense version of Mamma Mia. I was like, damn. I would not want to have to guess the father of that child. That is 108 suitors. Hot. Skip it away.
That's like a Jerry Springer episode. You are not the father.
And you're not the father. And congratulations. No child support for this man. No. No. Keep on moving. Anyways.
So many paternity tests.
So many. We just can't keep count. There are myths that Pan gave Artemis her hunting dogs and that he taught Apollo the secret of prophecy. If that is the case, that god is a whole lot older and his origins remain a mystery in history. Alright, so here we'll get into some actual mythology stories here. Generally, Pan is known for helping the gods fight the dastardly Typhon. One I plan on covering in his own episode.
You keep saying that!
I will eventually get to him, I promise.
I'm gonna end up doing him. I'm just no. She's gonna reference him six more times, and I'm just gonna give up and be like, fine! I'll do it.
Typhon. I'm sorry. Give me a second to collect myself. Okay. Typhon is known to be one of the most horrific Greek mythological creatures or monsters there is. In this story, Zeus and others were going against Typhon, and Pan let out a horrendous screeching noise that scattered everyone in terror. Now that is a very simplified version of what this story is, but I'm pretty sure I'm gonna get to it. But that's what Pan did. Pan was a fucking banff. Another famous myth is the origin of Pan's pan flute.
Mm.
Essentially, there was this wood nymph named Syrinx, minding her own business, returning from a hunt, and Pan pursued her. She didn't want to give Pan a time of day, and ended up going to her sisters who had her turn into a reed. As the wind blew through the reeds, it produced a beautiful sound. Since he could not determine which reed she turned into, he cut 7, or 9, depending on the version, joined them side by side in different lengths, and created the instrument bearing the same name of Syrinx, which he named after his not-so-beloved beloved.
Well, he beloved her, but she was like,
she was like, hey, no. Yeah. It's also now commonly known as a pan flute. Have you ever played one?
No.
I have. For some reason, my...
Okay, so that whole thing is messed up.
Yes, it is.
But particularly, he named it after her, and then we...
Know it as the pan flute.
Know it after him instead of after her.
Yep. My parents...
This is nymph erasure. I will not stand for it.
I will not stand. This will not stand. Anyways, growing up, my blood father, had an arrangement of flutes. I don't know why. There were Native American flutes that were very beautiful. I loved playing them. And then there were the pan flutes. There were all sorts of flutes. There was a pan flute, and I would play it, and I would just do whatever the fuck I wanted with it while my father was gone. Because he would go on these crazy adventures, which were not that crazy, and were actually for business.
But as a child, sounded like adventures. Yeah.
As a child, in my head, I was like, oh my god, I want to be with my dad because he's like Indiana Jones. And then my dad would be like, someday I'll take you. But that never happened. Because that was not what was going on. Because my dad would come back and be like, I bring you gifts. And I'm like, wow, this looks like an ancient something something. But it's not. I digress. Another nymph story follows a wonderful singer and dancer nymph named Echo.
I'm glad you're touching on her because I saw it and then I didn't write it down and I was like, I should have talked about her.
I definitely got her in here. She scorned the love of any man. And this angered Pan so much that he ordered his followers to kill her.
Rude.
I agree.
Octopus Pan.
This led to Echo being torn to pieces and spread all across the earth.
Oof.
Yeah. Gaia received these pieces and made her voice remain as the last word of others. Echo. There are other versions where Echo and Pan had children. In other versions, Pan was in love with Echo, but Echo scorned the love of any man enraptured in Narcissus.
So what? If they have a big ego, she's like, no.
If they're narcissistic, basically. She's like, fuck you. And do we blame her? No. Because, honestly. Anyways.
Nobody needs that trauma.
No one needs that trauma. We've already experienced that. Anyways, the word panic comes from Pan, having afternoon naps and shouting when disturbed to inspire panic in others. It is said that Pan favored the Athenians and inspired panic in their enemies. The Persians in the Battle of Marathon in 450 BC, which any of you that watched the movie 300 and loves that story about the Spartans, this is the battle pre-Xerxes the First, and where his daddy first tried invading Greece and failed. So think pre-300 storyline. So this is before Xerxes was like, I'm going to come and fuck things up. So the Athenians won on this one because it was said that they inspired panic throughout their enemies. As I stated previously, Pan is associated with sex. One of the myths here has to do with Hermes teaching Pan how to masturbate.
We're going all the way there, guys. Oh, yeah.
So if you... forewarned, this is an adult episode. Anyways. Thus... Pan taught the shepherds, and that is supposedly how that all started. Now, when I saw that, I was like, well, how do you mean? And then there's literally a picture of a statue of Pan getting dirty with a goat.
Oof.
I think it's a goat. It's either a goat or a sheep. Women who had sex with many men were considered Pan girls. It is said Pan's greatest attempt at love was with the moon goddess Selene. He accomplished this by wrapping himself in sheepskin to hide his hairy black goat form, and drew her down from the sky to a forest where he seduced her. I want to know how the fuck he got away with that, because if you have goat hindquarters, and you're just in sheepskin, it ain't gonna look like regular skin. Like, I mean, it ain't gonna look like you're human, because you got hooves. You know what I'm saying?
Well, maybe he wore it like... almost like a cloak, but around his waist. So it was more like a skirt. That might hide it.
Okay, that's a good point.
Arguing the semantics of how he got away with it.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, shit. Okay. Pan could actually be multiplied into a swarm of Pans.
Wow.
All with individual names. And all I kept thinking as I was looking at this was the watermelon people from Steven's universe. Because they all, like, have sentience.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, wow, he could have his own panic at his own disco.
That's so much better than what I was thinking. Pan ended up having 12 sons and helped Dionysus in the war against the Indians with his kiddos.
Huh.
Now, as I mentioned before, Pan is considered to be the only Greek god to have died. This is according to a Greek historian named Plutarch, where the news of Pan's death came during the reign of Tiberius, 14 to 37 CE. In this story, a sailor named Themis was on his way to Italy when a divine voice told him basically to spread the word, and when he got to shore, he did so, and everyone was upset about it. Some believe that this death of Pan was the beginning of the advent of theology. Christians actually turned it into a pun, since Pan also means all, by saying, all demons had perished. There are other historians that believe Thamus had actually been hearing the shouts of the news of Tammuz being dead and not Pan, and Thamus and misinterpreted the whole fucking message. In the 18th century, there was a revival of interest in Pan by liberal scholars, I say that in air quotes. For example, seeing Pan as a symbol expressed through sexuality. In Painswick, Gloucestershire, a group of 18th century gentry organized an annual procession dedicated to Pan. They built a statue of Pan and built temples. The tradition died out in the 1830s, and then was revived again in the 1885 by a vicar mistaking it as something more ancient in nature, and eventually, in 1950, was put to end by a successor and the statue was buried. Like, can you imagine being that guy that finds that stat, like, the stuff? It's like, oh, the ancients were here and they did this wonderful procession. Oh, we must continue the ancient doings. And it's literally, like, 30 years prior, or 50 years prior. It wasn't really that old. In the 19th century, there was a great resurgence of Pan in art and literature. Some believe he is referenced in Peter Pan from the mindset of Pan being sort of pre-civilization golden age in a child's mind. Discussing the whole part of whether or our natural instincts are in fact good or in actuality bad and uncivilized in nature. Getting all sorts of philosophical over here. In 1890, there was a novella titled The Great God Pan, and it is considered a very well-done horror story, even by Stephen King. And I looked into the synopsis, and just reading that makes me unsure if I can stomach it, but I might try it at some point. I don't know. Let's just say it involves children in a scary way. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure how I'll take it if I read it after just how I reacted from reading the first book on that one series.
The Black Jewel trilogy series.
Yeah. Trilogy. Mm-hmm. By...
It's Anne Bishop. It's more than... It was originally a trilogy, but she has since written many more books, so I wouldn't call it a trilogy anymore.
Is it a series now?
I would call it a series.
So she buys me the trilogy before I moved to Hawaii back in 2016. And I read the first book, and I was a little traumatized. So I'm like slowly getting... By slowly, I mean it's been years, me getting into the second book of the series.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I will eventually be ready for that. Pan, for some reason, is associated with the devil in looks. Historians believe this deals with the Victorian and Edwardian era neo-paganism. Early modern versions of Satan are in fact with more clawed feet and wings and looking semi-human. In 1933, a book was published by Egyptologist Margaret Murray, The God of Witches. It is here she theorized that Pan and a horned god worshipped by a cult across Europe are one and the same.
I've heard that theory before.
It's just a theory. That doesn't mean it's the same being, per se. Anywho's it. There was Pan.
Oh, nice.
He was fun to look into. I took a little bit of liberty in his artwork. He has longer flowing locks than most Greek depictions of him are. But at the same time, like, I looked up, I literally went online and I was like, handsome Greek men. And they have these long, luscious locks. And I was like, you know what? I don't see that on men very often. From, like, Greek art. So we're gonna fucking run with this shit. So, mine has long, flowy locks and a goatee. Yes, a goatee for his goat hind. Standing in the trees. Anywho's it. Alright, we're gonna take a quick break. And we will be right back after this commercial.
And we're back. So this week I researched nymphs, mostly because Eliza suggested it since hers referenced them. And nymphs are minor Greek deities that serve as the personification of nature. Different types of nymphs have different names, such as the naiads of fresh water, the nereids of salt water, and the dryads or wolf nymphs, etc., because there are so many types of nymphs.
Yeah, I gave you a little bit of a broad topic there, didn't I?
It's fine. So, nymphs are generally depicted as beautiful women and existed in or around the areas that they represent. For example, Oreads would be found in the mountains, because they're mountain nymphs.
Some nymphs served specific gods or goddesses, like Artemis. One group of Artemis's nymphs were called the Nymphaei Artemisiae, for example. These were 60 Oceanides nymphs, and they were for her choir.
Oh.
They were all 9 years old, and they were the daughter of Okeanos.
Oh, okay.
She also had 20 nymphs of Amnesis as her handmaidens.
I was expecting you to say harem. I don't know why, but that's what I was expecting. I was like, what?
Well, there's a theory about that that I don't go into, but...
Oh my god!
Yeah, so basically... People are like, Artemis is asexual. Yeah, she definitely doesn't have any kind of sexual interest in anybody. And then all the lesbians are over here like, that sure is a lot of handmaidens.
Just gals being pals.
Yeah. So the 20 nymphs of Amnesis were supposed to tend to her hunting gear and hounds. I'm having a really hard time talking today.
The way you're like, I just imagine them being at like a camp for a hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And all these women just taking care of her gear. And then, like, after the hunt, they have a feast, and then things happen. Just saying.
So, I'm going to read an excerpt from Ovid's Metamorphoses that kind of goes into a story about her and her handmaidens.
Okay, cool. I'm ecstatic.
There was a valley clothed in hanging woods of pine and cypress named Gargaphy. Sacred to chaste Artemis, huntress queen. Deep in its farthest comb, framed by the woods, a cave lay hid, not fashioned by man's art, but nature's talent copied artistry. For in the living limestone she had carved a natural arch, and there a limpid spring flowed lightly babbling into a wide pool. Its waters girdled with grassy sward. Here, tired after the hunt, the goddess loved her nymphs to bathe her with the water's balm. Reaching the cave, she gave her spear and quiver and bow unstrung to an attendant nympha. Others received her robes over their arms. Two loosed her sandals. More expert than these, Crocale tied the hair loose on her shoulders into a knot, her own hair falling free. Then Nepheli and Hale and Rannis and Piale and Secus brought the water in brimming jars and poured it over her. And white Titania bathed there in the pool, her loved familiar pool. It chanced the grandson of Cadmus, the day's hunt finished, idly wandering through unknown clearings of the forest, found the sacred grove, so fate guided him, and came upon the cool, damp cave. At once, seeing a man, all naked as they were, the nymphae, beating their breast, filled the whole grove with sudden screams and clustered round Artemis to clothe her body with their own. But she stood taller, a head taller than them all, and as the clouds are colored when the sun glows late and low, or like the crimson dawn, so deeply blushed Artemis, caught unclothed. Her troop pressed close about her, but she turned aside, and looking backwards, all she had, the water, she seized and flung it in the young man's face, which transformed him into a stag. The stag which later Artemis's hounds ripped into pieces.
You can't see my face. None of the viewers can see my face, but if you could, oh my sweet geez. Just gals being pals, bathing each other. What?
Yep. So, on top of that, Artemis also had three nymph attendants from Hyperborea, and these were named Upis, Loxo, and Hikairgi, and they were demigoddesses of Delos Island. They were worshipped on the island for their skills in archery. Upis means aim, Loxos, trajectory, and Hikairgi, distancing. It was believed that nymphs, not in service to deities, resided in areas that humans tended not to be near, but lone travelers could encounter them if they went far enough into the wilderness. Encounters with nymphs could be dangerous, causing men to become infatuated or mad from spying on them while they danced or bathed. Nymphs were also sometimes lovers or parents to gods and heroes. Achilles' mother's Thetis was a Nereid, and Thetis and Eurynome tended to Hephaestus when he was thrown from Olympus by one of his parents. And the nymphs of Nyssa tended Dionysus when he was young. Nymphs were generally considered playful, as depicted in many paintings, especially ones that spent time with Dionysus, because everyone's going to be super surprised about that.
Yeah.
Nymphs could shapeshift into plants or animals depending on the type of nymph they were. Some nymphs, like Scylla, were turned into monsters.
Oh.
Some were turned into constellations, like Callisto, who was first turned into a bear and then into a constellation, and she is now known as Arctos, or Ursa Major.
Aww.
Nymphs are considered long-lived rather than immortal, and if they are a nymph of a particular thing, like ash trees, then when the nymph dies, the tree dies as well.
Oh.
And unfortunately, vice versa. If the tree was cut down, the nymph would die, which is why humans believe some places holy and they would not harm the land there to keep the nymphs safe.
Oh my goodness. If anybody here reads Lore of Olympus in webtoons, that is definitely
something they go over.
A key thing that they go over. It's sad.
Mm-hmm. In present day, nymphs are in many things. Art, movies, games, etc. Definitely Disney's Hercules, where they're being spied on and chased by Phil, who's a satyr. And that is very typical for satyrs in regards to nymphs.
Yes.
They are a creature type in Magic the Gathering,
mm-hmm.
and a part of D&D lore.
Not even surprised.
They are a part of Elder Scrolls. They are found in High Rock and Hammerfell. The word nymph has also been applied to a stage of the insect growth before the metamorphosis into their adult stage.
Lovely.
Yeah. There are many more Greek stories about nymphs, if you are interested, as nymphs number in the hundreds, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And while some were the children of Gaia and Uranus, some are the children of Greek gods. So you know the drama that's going to go along with those stories.
Right.
For example, Milanoe, the daughter of Persephone. Check that out.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know she had a daughter.
So I'm going to have to go from memory here. But there are certain parts of Greek mythology where Hades, Poseidon, and Zeus are three completely separate gods. They're okay. their own deities.
Okay.
There's another sect of the religion where they believe that Zeus and Hades are actually two sides of the same coin.
What?
Yeah. And so when you read the story of Milanoe, sometimes it's written out as Persephone's child with Zeus in his aspect of Hades, where they're the same being. It's just the other side.
Okay.
But sometimes when you read it, it might say the daughter of Persephone and Zeus pretending to be Hades, which is a very big difference.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. We can move forward from that. Gives me a bad feeling on the inside.
So that's a basic rundown of nymphs that barely scratches the surface because there's just so many types. I said dryads are wood nymphs, but there are hamadryads, there are individual types of dryads per type of tree. So it really breaks down from like really big areas all the way down to very specific things.
Damn.
Yeah.
That was insane. And that was just a small like rundown of them, not even like going into too much depth.
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about the art you did for this week?
Sure. I was attempting to when I was looking up art of nymphs, I noticed that a lot of it was very male gazed oriented, where it's like you're spying on the nymph, which obviously is a huge part of their stories. People spied on them all the time.
Creeps.
Yeah. And I didn't want to draw a nymph that way. I wanted to draw it more like with a female gaze. So she is kind of just hanging out, playing in the water of a pond in her grotto in the woods. She's fully clothed. She's just having like her time instead of it being...
You know what? I forgot for a minute that she was clothed. I was like, was she?
Yeah.
I just scanned her in this morning. Sorry.
But anyway, so just kind of contemplating life and...
I just want to say your art's getting a lot better.
Thanks.
I know you're practicing a lot.
It's this mandatory second job I have.
Mandatory?
I have a lot of work going into it.
Listen, guys. We do this as a hobby. Air quotes. It's a hobby, though. Like, I find it very intriguing. I like learning all about this stuff. With that being said, you have been doing a lot of art lately with the watercolors and the drawing, and it's improving because of that.
Yes.
Outside of...
So is yours.
This. Debatable. Like, some pictures I draw, I'm like, pretty did an alright job here. And then I look at it later and I'm like, I put a slant here, and I don't like it anymore, but I kind of like it still.
Every artist is critical of their own work.
Some of my work, I'm like, I could have done so much better just looking at it in comparison to some of my other drawings. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, but it's also how much time you spend on it. For example, there's this girl on TikTok who started pulling words out of a cup and then drawing whatever those three things were that had like nothing to do with each other mm-hmm. in one picture. So I was like, that seems like a good way to make my brain kind of more creative. So I started doing that, and some of them have been absolutely crazy. Like, one of them was Tiger Donut Swamp. So I have a tiger that's painted like a chocolate sprinkled donut standing on top of a lily pad in a swamp.
What about the one that's like the sheep? Was it a sheep? With the fishnet stockings?
Yes. And a turnip.
That will forever be one of my favorite pictures that you've drawn.
It's not a very good picture, but it's funny to look at because she's like laying out scandalously.
Suggestive.
But has like human legs, but then like hooves at the end. So she's fluffy on her body and she's got fishnet stockings and then she's got like this huge ass turnip in her mouth. But anyway, my point about doing that is I was doing art while you were playing Valhalla the other day.
Yeah.
And I pulled like five things, I think, just to like try it.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished the original drawing and I was like, you were still playing. So I was like, I'll just keep adding detail. Why not? And the more detail I added, the better it got. So like, it just really has to do with how much time you spend on it.
I think it depends on the picture. Like, for example, last week's Spriggan that I drew.
Yeah.
I spent a good chunk of time on that Spriggan.
Mm-hmm.
As you are aware. However, the Spriggan versus my Pan piece of art, which I spent, I think, either about the same time or a little bit less on Pan.
Hmm.
I like that more, the Pan one, than my Spriggan. And I don't know if it's because...
Well, Pan is definitely more your art style.
That's true.
The Spriggan was kind of like, not, I don't want to say chibi, but it's more, he's like cuter.
Because he's supposed to be a kid, so I'm like, okay, I don't draw kids very often.
Right.
So like, kid proportions are so much different. You'd think it'd be easy to change the proportion.
No.
But it's not. It's like a whole other thing. Like, I had a friend.
Big heads, big eyes.
Yeah, I had a friend in middle school, right? And I'd go to, like, camps with her. And she would draw chibis. Like, it was nothing. And I'd be like, I want to draw that well. Like, I was so, like, watching her do that so well. I was like, I want to be able to do that. So I go and I try to make chibis. It's nothing in comparison. Because, let's be real, my art style is, like, way better on other things.
Yeah.
Like, for example, my werewolf turned out way better. Mm-hmm. My...
They're like harsher lines.
Yeah. And the more I get to accepting that, the better off I'm probably gonna be as an artist. I just remember going into an art studio when I was 12 because my friend was there for classes and I had to be with her because, like, we were going to the same place afterwards and her mom was my ride. So I go in there and the art teacher's like, yeah, see, the problem here is that you're using the wrong art style. And I was like, bitch, say what? She's like, yeah, you're going for, like, cartoons, and you're a realistic artist. And I was like, bitch, say what? And she goes, here,
this is a magazine. Pick a fucking picture. She didn't say that. I was 12.
I was going to say, you also weren't calling her a bitch because you were 12.
I was also, yeah. In my mind, though.
Pick a picture and draw it. And I was like, fine. So I'm sitting there and I draw this tiger. And I finish it and I was like, holy fuck. This is like the best picture I've ever drawn in my life. And she was like, you can call me back and like try to take lessons if you want. I was like, no. No, I'm good. Because growing up, I didn't have art classes. I didn't have an art teacher. I had books. I went to the library. I was like, this book looks cool. And I just try to copy the drawing on there. That's how I started art. And then when I go and I look at YouTubers, like, for example, ZHC. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know who ZHC is, look him up. He's got really good shit out there. He didn't start off too good either. No offense to ZHC, everyone has to start somewhere. But you look at the comparison from his art now to his art before, he didn't go to classes for that, he taught himself.
Right.
And it was just practice, 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 and I'm like, bro, you're right, you're not wrong.
And he uses Posca pens, which are kind of a difficult medium to use.
Yes, they can be. Depends, I think it's how he does it, though.
Yeah.
Like,
he's probably learned the tricks from doing it so much.
Right, exactly. And they also always use specific sealant to make sure it, like, stays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just ZHC, though. Like, I've seen other YouTubers, like, for example, Domix from Canada. He started off doing, I think it was, like, architecture school is where he was, like, he was an architectural engineer. Stops all that. He's a YouTuber, you know, doing, like,
he does animation.
Yeah, he does animations. He taught himself how to do animation. And I'm like, I respect that fully because I've tried teaching myself animation and it is not easy.
No.
At all.
Drawing something once, let alone enough times to make it look like it's moving is hard.
And when some art major comes up to me like, it's all about the reference photo. I'm like, bitch, I know what you're saying, but me doing it, that's a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing. I have a hard time. But I guess it's like the more you practice with it, because I've heard a lot of artists say, what you do is you take that initial character that you've created, and you keep drawing them, and they end up eventually evolving into what their final form is going to be. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And I just need to get to that point. I tried using Bodycoon on Pan.
I see his little posture over
here. Yeah, that posture is nothing like what I drew. Is that...
No, but it is what your template before the final was, because I saw it, and he's holding his hand like he was supposed to be holding his flute in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I can see where you were going. You just went a different direction for the one you chose.
Yeah, because I was drawing it, and I got really frustrated.
And also, like, fuck hands, guys!
Oh my god!
If you're an artist, hands are so hard. I'm getting better at them, though. Like,
you
I was
are.
Actually proud of the ones on the nymph,
mm-hmm.
and I did another three-pool just art the other day, and it was a gargoyle. And
those
hands turned out really good, and I just rough sketched them out really fast.
It actually caught my attention. Like, I was playing Valhalla, and then I look at the corner of my eye, I'm like, what you drawing?
Gargoyle.
That looks good. I was like, where did you get that from?
I was using a reference of Goliath from the show Gargoyles, but it wasn't like a picture from the show. It was actually a figurine of him before it had been painted. So it was like that solid gray color.
That's legit.
But I mean, like, you really wouldn't have to add too much to that because he's made of stone.
Oh, wow.
That's my kind of craft. Half-assed. Anyway.
Anyway, sorry we've been on this tangent about art, but not sorry.
Down the bunny hole. Reminders, everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own of these entities, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of either a name or handle and where to find you, or if you would like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos. You can message us on here as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.